How's it going, and welcome to episode 54 of On the Wire. We are a proud member of the Pitcher List Podcast Network. Follow the pod on Twitter at On the Wire Pod. And if you're listening on a platform that does allow ratings and reviews, please take a second to let us know what you think. I am Kevin Hastings. You can follow me on Twitter at HastingKevin. Adam is off this week. He can and should be followed at 80 grade, all spelled out. In his absence, I am joined by my good friend, Lou Landers. He is director of baseball content at drroto.com, co-host with Lucas Beery on the Lucas Baseball Podcast, host of Counting Stats Baseball Pod, Lou's Locks Daily MLB DFS Podcast. He's a Sirius XM host. Thank you so much for joining me. And I probably left some things out. You have all kinds of quality baseball and fantasy baseball content out there.
Kevin, I think you did a really good job on that intro. Couldn't have done it better myself, actually. You can find all my work by following me at Landers Talks on Twitter and check me out on SiriusXM Fantasy Sports every Sunday morning at 9:30 a.m. Eastern with Dr. Roto from drroto.com, where you'll find most of my work as well. But to today, man, I had a great time joining you on this show last year. So thanks for having me back. I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely. There's only been a handful of return guests thus far, and most definitely you're our first in-season repeat guest here. So thank you so much for taking the time.
I feel honored.
Oh, thank you. We are definitely honored. As we get going here, we typically in season like to kick the podcast off with some news and notes from the week, and we don't get into everything in the big news stories. We're really trying to direct it towards what may affect what we're going to do in our Fab Leagues for this week, and specifically this evening, as this will drop on Sunday morning. First of all, Chris Sale placed on the 60-day IL this week. Not really surprising, but it does give us a little bit of a timeline. At least we know it's going to be at least until June, until we see him in the Red Sox rotation. A couple of questions. First, are you still trying to hold Sale if you have him rostered and you don't have IL spots in your league? And second, any interest in Michael Wacha or Rich Hill, who are both now in that rotation for the foreseeable future and very low rostered across leagues out there?
Well, I know you didn't ask about IL spots, but obviously if I have those, I'm holding him, no question. If I don't have IL spots, I will hold him for now until I need that roster spot. It's definitely hard to hold him for too long in those no IL leagues, though. Really depends on how healthy the rest of your team is. Maybe you get a little lucky and avoid the injury bug for enough time where it's worth holding on to him. We know that if he comes back healthy, he's an SP1. With Rich Hill, not interested, especially after reading the report of him having a relief pitcher piggyback his starts. I'm not sure he's going to get to go deep enough to qualify for wins, and that kind of concerns me. But Michael Wacha, pretty interesting. He made some adjustments with his pitch mix towards the end of last year. I think he could be a K per inning kind of guy and rack up some wins because the Boston Red Sox are going to score a lot of runs for him.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I definitely agree that Wacha will probably get more innings. So for the strikeouts and the wins, he would be the guy that I would look to here. And we've been in on Michael Wacha, a lot of us, multiple times over the past few years. And when healthy, he gets us excited a little bit. So as long as he's going to stay healthy and get out there and be able to get those innings, yeah, I think I agree. He's probably the direction I would go here.
Yeah, well, you look at Nick Pivetta, who late 20s, I think he's 29 now, really wasn't all that exciting with Philadelphia, but last year actually impressed a lot with the Red Sox. The ratios weren't as good as they should have been, as some of the other indicators might show, but the strikeouts flew up. And maybe the Red Sox have that same kind of luck and effect with Michael Wacha. I think it was a low-risk signing and a smart one. I think he could actually be quite productive for them and our fantasy rosters.
Yep, and only 4% rostered in online championships. That's the 12-team leagues on NFBC. Widely available for those that may need some starting pitching depth. The big one came right on Monday, early in the week, and that was when Tampa sent outfielder Austin Meadows to the Tigers for infielder Isaac Paredes. There aren't really direct concerns, as Paredes was sent to the minors, and Meadows is nearly universally rostered, even in shallow leagues. But the kicker was that it opened up a spot for Josh Lowe in Tampa. And he was recalled after being sent down himself just a couple of days earlier. How high are you on Josh Lowe where he is available? Because with this happening on Monday, some people, especially in NFBC formats where a prospect has to have been drafted and then dropped in order to be available in the player pool, when he was sent down last week, that did occur on Sunday nights. He's only 38% rostered in online championships, and I would tend to believe he was drafted in most leagues. So he's got some availability out there.
He does. And if you want power speed combo, I think Lowe is great for your roster. I'm going no lower than 50 fab on him, maybe as high as 90 at the moment across certain leagues. He was in the lineup opening day for the Rays, which was a good sign considering it was against a lefty. We weren't sure of the playing time. They like to platoon quite a bit. I think he's actually a better fantasy player right now than he is real life player, if that makes sense. And Lucas and I on the Lucas Baseball podcast this week, Lucas brought up that he could be very comparable to a Robbie Grossman, maybe not hit for a high average, but have good OBP skills, maybe steal you 15 to 18 bases, hit 15 to 18 homers. And I would take that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I agree. He's going to be a popular guy. I'm with you in that price range as well. I am very outspoken over the episodes throughout the past year that I'm pretty conservative when it comes to my bid amounts. I like to be aggressive as far as in looking ahead. There's no looking ahead here. The looking ahead was he got sent down, so he was dropped. So he is available, and this is, I might make an exception and go a little higher than I typically like to bid early in the season, because I agree. As a fantasy player, he can put up numbers that can help our teams, and now all season long, that's the advantage to bidding a little higher on a player or two early in the season.
It certainly is. And I think with really all these players that we talk about on Waiver Wire podcast, it really comes down to roster construction for your specific team in that specific league, right? There's some people that might have heavy dose of speed already, and spending potentially 100 plus fab might not be the smartest decision, even though he is a quality player, especially in a league where you can't trade. If you could trade, fine, pick him up and then move him for something you need, but you can't. So I think people do have to be a little selective in terms of what they might need, because you might need that fab for something else this week, particular that you need more in terms of categories, especially in those roto leagues.
Yeah, and this is a good example for me where, yeah, I'm going to bid a little higher than I typically would this time of year, but bidding on him in every league, because it's so league dependent. You never know when guys are going to sneak through for a lower bid than you think.
Certainly so. I'm with you. I hope I get him at least somewhere. I'd like to have a
Yep, I agree. Michael Pen, he got a late start to spring training. He had some visa issues, so now he's looking to build up with a few starts in the minors. He had a start, I believe, on Thursday when three or four innings looked good, but he's still got to build up. And that means that Tyler Alexander is potentially looking at two starts this week, at home versus the Red Sox and at Kansas City. Any interest in the lefty for the volume this week?
This early on in roto leagues, I have a tough time taking chances because of how quickly your ratios can turn negative. I'd probably rather use a high strikeout reliever over a fifth starter like Alexander. The Royals match up pretty decent, though, and the game being versus Boston in Detroit and right, not in Fenway Park is a huge plus, so I wouldn't fault someone for doing it. It's just not my style early on. In the past, I've gone burned by a few terrible starts and set myself back in those ratios. I'd rather, again, have those relievers that can rack up those Ks, keep my ratios down, and even if they give up a run or two, it's only in an inning, and it doesn't burn as much.
Yep. Yeah, this early in the season, this is hopefully a move you don't need to make. But if you are lacking depth and maybe aren't rostering a reliever that you feel comfortable putting in there rather than your sixth or seventh starting pitcher, I can see this. And what caught my eye when I was looking over the schedule was exactly what you said, that start against the Red Sox does come at home in Detroit for Alexander.
Yeah, I do not like lefties in Fenway Park unless you're Chris Sale, realistically, yeah. Because you get stacked with righties in the lineup. They take advantage of that big green monster in Fenway. It's a recipe for disaster. So definitely a big boost to the two-start week for that start being in Detroit. Again, depends on your league format. Some people play in daily roster moves, right? Some people play matchup versus or head-to-head versus Roto. Then it might be a little more interesting.
Yep, absolutely. Lou, opening day, this was funny. Thursday morning, I'm setting my lineups and wondering why there is an SD next to Taylor Rogers' names in my leagues. I had not heard the news yet. The morning of opening day, the Padres and Twins finalized a trade. The Padres acquiring Taylor Rogers, the reliever, and outfielder Brent to San Diego. Chris Paddock and Emilio Pagan back the other way. Bob Melvin has named Rogers the Padres closer, and he did close out their first win. So that is good for those of us that were drafting Taylor Rogers in hope that he was going to be the Twins closer at the time. Going back the other way, we haven't seen a save opportunity for Minnesota yet. And there was a lot of speculation with all of the guys the Padres had in their bullpen that Emilio Pagan may have gotten that job in San Diego. Are you still hopeful that he gets the saves in Minnesota?
So let me hit on Rogers first. I think he is a closer in San Diego, like you mentioned, and it only helps that Suarez got beat around pretty hard in his first outing. For the Twins, though, if I had to take a guess, because that's really all we can do at this point, as you mentioned, they haven't gotten that save opportunity. Pagan will get opportunities, but I also like Alcala, and even Duffy could get opportunities. I think Baldelli has come out and said that it's going to be mix and match. What worries me about Pagan is the home run ball as well. In a one-run game, let's say, guy giving up solo homers is not a recipe for success. If you own Pagan, I would not get rid of him. I think that would be a risky move to do so because he could end up getting saves and then you dropped a guy that's getting saves. If he's out there on the wire, though, I'm not as sure about spending too big on him because I think at the very best case scenario, maybe he gets 10 to 12 saves, but he could end up getting two or three or none at all in this bullpen. You just don't know right now. So I would pump the brakes there. I still am a big Alcala fan. I'm sure you remember when I had you on Canning Stats in the offseason, he was one of my deep closers, and I still think he's going to be a guy that can get that job, and I'd rather own and roster him because at least the ratios are good, the strikeouts are good, and I'm not worried about certain things like I am with Pagan, who really, if you really dive deep into Pagan, he's had one good...
And I agree. I think that's the move here. I think if you already roster him, it's a hold and wait and see, just like you were planning on doing. Nothing has really changed. You don't know if he has a job. You hope he does. And what is probably most likely, as you mentioned, is he's going to get some saves, but not nearly all of the opportunities. So I don't think much has changed if he's already on your roster. And if I really am hurting at this point in the season and I'm still looking at speculating on someone that may get some saves, I can see going a couple dollars here. Definitely not too much or too high of a bid in order to try to acquire him where he's available.
So I have a bit of a predicament with him because I picked him up in leagues on Sun King. He might get opportunities with San Diego. Now I have him. But I have David Robertson sitting out there on the waiver wire, who I added in a lot of 15-team leagues because I was expecting him to get save opportunities. He's there in those 12-teamers now, and I don't want to drop Pagan because he could get saves, but I feel like it's okay to drop him if it means getting David Robertson, who has a clear path to saves.
Yes. Similar situations as the season was approaching, but we've already seen David Robertson with that save opportunity. So definitely where available. And I think some of these managers, even in situations where they're going to spread the save opportunities around, use different guys in different situations, I still think that what managers do at the first opportunity of the season gives us some insight into what they would prefer to happen throughout the year.
I do think so, but specifically with Robertson, who we can talk about a little later, I think I wanted to. You look at the situation there. He's an older player, signed on a one-year deal with a number of incentives. The Cubs have no long-term plans for him. It's more see what he can do, get us saves, and then maybe become trade bait later on in the season. Whereas a guy like Rowan Wick, who was potentially going to get saves, is under team control for a little longer and at some point could get the opportunities. But it seems to me like it's Robertson's job to lose. And if he were to lose it, then it could be Wick. But there's also Michael Givens there, which hurts Wick's outlook. So for me, I expect Robertson to get 75% or more of the opportunities until eventually he's traded, unless the Cubs miraculously play competitive baseball through July.
Yeah. Yep. I agree with everything you just said there, Lou. I think that was most of the big news that we saw this first week. Obviously, there could be more things happening throughout the rest of the weekend that could affect what we're doing Sunday evening. But I think we'll move on here and start diving into some players. Before we dive into the players, however, just a couple of things quick. These are the exact same topics that Adam and I covered last week, but I wanted to get your insight as it's still, some leagues may not have even had a fab period last week. A lot of them did prior to the start of the season on Thursday, but we're our first or second fab run of the season, just overall. And you've touched on this a little bit already just throughout this conversation, but what's your early season abstract?
I usually have been hesitant in the past in the early season. This year I was more aggressive on certain players, though, especially in leagues where I drafted early. You can get guys with closer's job in the mix for saves, guys who are in line to play regularly. I think it's important to jump on them and even spend more than you normally would. Also, a lot of the top prospects this year have already been called up to the big league, so I'm not as worried about saving fab for those players as the season progresses, which I might have been in the past.
That's a great point I haven't heard brought up yet.
So that's what I got there in terms of early season. I think there's a lot that kind of goes into being prepared, though, for your fab leagues, because some people have only three, but some people have 8, 10, 12, 15, whatever it might be. I have 8 in particular, and what I try to do is keep them on 2 sites, Fantrax and NFBC. I think it makes it a lot easier to track. And my plan is usually on Thursday, I'll look around, I'll place initial bids in all the leagues. Saturday night, I'll revisit those, adjust some, delete some, add new ones. And then Sunday, 1 hour before the moves process, is when I go through it just one more time, maybe adjust the bids and see if I might have missed something. But I find that if you're doing it 3 different times throughout the week, it helps stay prepared, not miss a player, but also utilize my time back.
Yeah, and things happen. We don't know what may come up for us on Sundays in our lives. So having done some work ahead of time, and like you said, having the bids in preliminarily for what you think you're going to want to do, you may have wished you could have tweaked those if you get busy on Sunday, but at least you didn't do nothing. And so you're still trying to improve your team.
And in this day and age with smartphones and everything, you can set reminders. I set an alarm typically to remind myself as well to get onto the phone or to the computer and make sure I adjust those bids wherever I might be. Because typically if I'm anywhere, I have my phone, right?
Yep, absolutely. I'm big on that as well. The alarms on the phone are a savior. You would think as much as we're involved with fantasy baseball, that there wouldn't be things that we forget. But when you start playing multiple leagues on multiple sites, different things you can do at different times on different days, it is fairly easy to miss something. So I love that. I am big on the alarms on my phone. Just in case, it's a weekly, just in case there's day games on Monday, I have a lineup reminder for Monday. Same for Friday. Same for Fab on Sunday. I couldn't agree more with that.
Awesome. So there's a lot of talk I find also, Kevin, about where people get their info from. Obviously, they should be listening to the On the Wire podcast here, and they should be listening to the Lucas Baseball podcast with Lucas and I. But I find that if I listen to too many podcasts or read too many articles, it can cloud my judgment at times. Do you ever find?
I do. So we started this last off season knowing, Adam and I, that this was going to be the subject matter we wanted to cover on our podcast. And I actually, unfortunately, in some cases, stopped reading and listening to as much as I had in the past. For me, I didn't want to subconsciously copy other people's content. So some articles and podcasts that I have highly respected in the past, I did not consume last season. And obviously, there are those disadvantages that I talked about. I'm not getting the same information from those sources that I used to. But there is also something to be said for forming your own opinion as you're doing your own research.
Yeah, and that's how I feel. And over the years, every single year, I listen to less and read less and less. Now, of course, I am the baseball director of content at drroto.com, so I'm reading all of that. But that's right. Enough. But that's enough. I don't need to go out there and seek a million opinions. And I like to use my own thoughts, my own kind of approach. And I base it on team needs at positions or in categories. In the past, it's been saves for me. This year, I took your advice. I took Lucas's advice and went earlier on closers. I'm not worried about saves right now. Like, take some, sure. But I was worried about stolen bases and Ks in more places. So for instance, two guys last week, I spent probably more than I should have. Hunter Green, going to get strikeouts. Jake Fraley has chance for 15 to 20 stolen bases if he can get more than 400 at bats this year with Cincinnati. I spent over 100 on Green, which is a lot for me early on. I never do it because he was a priority based on my team needs. So I can go out there and hear someone say, oh, spend 150 on Green. Oh, only spend 60 on Green. If I did that, I might not have gotten them, or I might have.
Yep. Could not agree more. You got to know your league mates. If you've been in a league with the same players for a number of years, their tendencies. So that helps in those situations. And even in NFBC formats, there's going to be players in your league that you can find their opinions out there and get an idea of how they're going to bid, or you've played with them in the past in some of the similar leagues and know their tendencies in those situations as well.
I'm with you there. There's obviously players who you don't know as well. And I'm not taking a knock. I'm never going to knock anyone in the industry. I respect everyone that's in there and puts out content. But I do find that there are some people who don't relay all the information they have in their head as to not give out information that could affect them in their leagues. Personally, I'm not like that. I find it even more challenging if every single person in my league knows who I'm going after. I take that challenge on and I want to give as much info as I possibly can. But there are people out there who don't. So don't take every single thing that someone says so literally. Take it with a grain of salt, because there are some people who will hold back a little bit if it could affect their leagues.
Yeah, I agree. My opinion on that personally for me is I don't mind sharing everything I'm thinking and pretty much everything I'm planning on doing, because one thing I have realized playing this with some of the same guys for over 20 years now is we all have egos. People who are listening to podcasts and reading articles, they're doing it because they want information and they want to know what others think. At the same time, our egos still make us think we know better. So if people in my leagues are listening and getting an idea of what I'm planning on doing, they still have, you know, their own opinions and they're like, nah, he's wrong.
It's true. And this came back and affected me a little bit. I think 2 weeks ago, SiriusXM with Dr. Roto, we were talking about late closers. And I noticed David Robertson's ADP was at 900 on Fantrax. So I had him at the top of my queue. I was like, this guy is free. And I guarantee you he gets as many saves, if not more, than Rowan Wick this year. Maybe it was bold at the time, but I said it. Within 2 hours, sniped on David Robertson. Do I know if that person heard it? No. I didn't specifically know the person, but pretty coincidental.
Yeah, there's a chance that definitely could have been the case. Let's get to some other players here for different categories. if we're in a situation where we are looking to improve our teams at this time of year, hopefully there's nothing we have to do, nothing that we're in dire need of yet. And categorically, that would not be the case. We may be in a bind in a position or two where we're looking for a player to fill a hole. And as we'll come up here in a little bit, when we're looking at just guys with extra opportunity, we have 14 teams this week, coming week, scheduled to play a 7-game week. So if you are in need for someone at a specific position, that's where I would look first. Some of the guys that, if they're available, then they obviously have some deficiencies, but at least we can hope to build the counting stat categories with the guys getting the volume for the week.
Definitely. There's a lot to look at when it comes to the schedules, and it really does mean something. I'm just setting my lineups for this week. I looked at the players that had 4 games over 3. I looked at the weather. There are some Cubs and some Brewers who I avoided if I could because I was concerned about the weather, and already they were postponed, right? So looking at schedules is always a big deal. It's always important.
Absolutely. All right, let's get to some players in some categories. First, we're going to take a real quick.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball, even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right, thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
All right, we are back. Once again, Lou Landers from DrRoto.com joining me here. And now we are going to dive into a few names that we're interested in coming into this evening's second fab run for a lot of our leagues, but first in-season fab run. It's, by the way, Lou, before we get into players, how much have you enjoyed baseball over the last couple of days?
Oh, it's amazing, man. Never have nothing to do. There's always something to look at, something to check in on. How's this player doing? How's this watch list player doing? How's my own team doing? The opener with the Yankees or Red Sox Friday was awesome, going to 11 innings. Still hate that extra innings rule, but I know they'll get rid of it eventually.
Yeah. There's been some exciting games. And speaking of exciting games, the very first player you have listed on the outline here in the power category, pretty phenomenal highlight from Thursday night.
Yeah, Mr. Seth Beer. I actually grabbed him in TGFBI on Sunday, rewarded me with that 3-run homer opening night. Good hitter, no position on the field, not graded as a very good defender, but he has a great bat and showed that in the minor league. With the universal DH now, this is a guy that got a huge boost for his career and also his fantasy outlook. So Seth Beer is a guy you should definitely be looking at. Great power, and even though he might sit for some lefties, still on the strong side of a platoon, and at some point might get that chance versus lefties anyway.
Yep. NFBC formats, even where he was not drafted, he does have a game under his belt, so he's in every player pool now. Only 6% rostered in online championship 12-team leagues, so pretty widely available. My player for power is not nearly as widely available. In fact, he's 100% rostered in those online championships. But the first couple of days of the season, Aimer Candelario of the Tigers is hitting cleanup, and he is available in 3/4, over 75% actually, of Yahoo leagues. So in the more shallow leagues, Candelario pretty widely available. And if he's going to hit cleanup in that improved Detroit lineup, we know that ballpark is one of the least favorable for power, at least on percentage of barrels that turns into home runs. However, he's got legitimate power. He's hit home runs there in the past. He's approached 20 home runs. Most projections have him for approaching 20 this season. And I'll take a cleanup guy if he's available, even in the shallowest of leagues, anytime I can get him.
Yeah, he's definitely owned in those 15 teamers. People have rostered him for sure. 12 teamers, though, some people ignore him. And there are people, believe it or not, who play 10 team leagues, Kevin.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I personally can't. I don't like that every single roster is loaded. But if he's available in 10 team leagues, and he very well should be, I would take a shot on him because he is a good hitter. He was highly touted at one point with the Cubs. And the lineup in Detroit is much improved. And if he's going to hit in the middle of it, even if he doesn't hit more than 20 homers, the rest of those counting stats should be excellent.
Yeah, absolutely. Moving on to the speed category, we have a player here for you that was, we thought we knew, but we weren't officially sure till the very last minute that he was going to make the opening day lineup.
I was hoping because of the Tatis injury that he would get that opportunity, and I'm glad he did. It's CJ Abrams. Making the opening day roster means that they don't plan on keeping him on the bench. Maybe against lefties. It's possible. And he could struggle to hit overall because he has not had much seasoning in the minor leagues. But what he can do is run. And he can run real fast. And that could lead to stolen bases. And that could lead to runs. And I'm not expecting that much from him. But even an on-base percentage of around 300, which isn't even good, but it's certainly doable, that could be enough for him to get those steals and those runs. So for me, I think CJ Abrams is a really nice pickup. And there's a lot of people who are sour on him because they don't think he's going to hit for much average. That only helps you in maybe not having to spend too much fat.
Yeah, absolutely. He's 78% rostered in online championships, 38% at Yahoo, and that has climbed over the past couple of days, some of those Yahoo leagues' daily transactions, but still over 60%. Of those Yahoo leagues, he is available. Speaking of running fast, Nick Madrigal for the Chicago Cubs, second time in two games, hitting second in the lineup. That's what I wanted to see. If he's going to be at the top of that lineup, he's going to score runs. He's going to steal bases. We know he's got great contact skills. Pretty much everything except power for Nick Madrigal, only 14% rostered in Yahoo leagues. And two-thirds of online championships. So even in a third of the 12-team leagues in NFBC formats, he's available.
Yeah, if you are okay with not getting the power from Madrigal, I think it's certainly worth a look. And you know what? A lot of people doubted if Dustin Pedroia would ever hit for power because of his size, or if Jose Altuve would ever hit for power because of his size. And I'm not saying Madrigal is going to be that type of player. I'm not saying he's going to hit for that type of power, certainly not at this point in the career, but it's certainly possible. There's nothing saying that he can't develop that pop because he does put the bat on the baseball. And from a stolen base standpoint, he hasn't shown it yet in the major leagues, but that doesn't mean he's not going to be able to do that either because he can run. I think he had 35 stolen bases in his last full minor league season in 2019 when he was still with the White Sox. So clearly the speed is there. The potential is there.
Yep. This is, if he's going to be at the top of the lineup, he's worth taking a shot on in my mind. Everything to do with that opportunity there. Speaking of opportunity, as I mentioned, 14 teams have a 7-game week. Arizona and Houston, on the other end of the spectrum, have both Monday and Thursday off. So it's going to be very difficult to use Diamondbacks and Astros for the first half of the week in FBC style formats where we can change our hitters again on Friday. With so many players playing Monday through Thursday, and those two teams, once again, the Diamondbacks and Astros, only having two games those first 4 days of the week. The teams that do have 7 games really quickly, once again, there are 14 of them. The Yankees, the Rays, the Blue Jays, the Tigers, the Royals, the Athletics, the Mariners, Atlanta, Philadelphia, Washington, Milwaukee, Pittsburgh, St. Louis, and San Diego all have 7 games. So as I said earlier, if you are in a bind at a particular position, that's where I would start my search, is with those teams. Lou, give me a couple of guys you have with nice opportunity coming up.
So one of the players I'm going to give you doesn't have seven games this week. I don't think I heard his team on the list, but it's Jeff McNeil, second baseman, outfielder eligible. It looks like he's going to get a lot of opportunities versus righties and lefties, either at second or in the corner outfield. And he's been a very productive hitter in the past. Mets lineup much improved this season. Definitely owned in most 15 team leagues, not necessarily though, certainly available in those 12 teamers. I think he should be rostered though. He can be a nice average booster and his positional eligibility is a plus. But the second guy I have, I'm a little more bullish on actually. It's Jurickson Profar. I know we've heard his name for a decade now. Believe it or not, he's only 29 years old still. First base and outfield eligibility, and with the right amount of opportunity, Profar could be productive. He looks like he's an everyday outfielder right now for the Padres. The opportunity is there. The eligibility at first base and corner infield just added bonus. Last two seasons, the Profar actually saw over 400 at-bats. He hit 20 homers in both, double-digit stolen bases in one of them, nine in the other, and 130 to 150 RBIs plus runs. Pretty productive player if you can scoop him off the wire right now. Again, been around for nearly 10 years, if you can believe it, and still has not had that massive breakout season. Not saying he's going to, but I would take 18 homers, 10 stolen bases from an everyday player.
Yeah, absolutely. And this was something that throughout the offseason I kept thinking the Padres might do a little more. They did end up adding Luke Voit for the designated hitter, but there's still plenty of opportunity in that lineup for Profar. And I agree. Double-digit home runs, double-digit stolen bases. We are emphasizing plate appearances, at-bats, innings pitched for players this season, rightfully so. It's something that's really became a hot topic over the past couple of seasons, and then especially with the season that Phil Deseaux had in his NFBC leagues last year, and that was a big part of what he has talked about. But there has to be some quality to those at-bats, and so many teams playing so many matchups and so many platoon splits these days, there is simply not enough players in even 12-team leagues, let alone 15-team leagues, for every single player in your starting lineup to be a quote full-time player. If he's going to get over 400, close to 500 plate appearances, what he does in those plate appearances is very viable.
Yeah, that's why I like him. And again, I think people have soured on him because he's been around for so long. He was the undisputed number one prospect in baseball at one point, has not lived up to those expectations. So because of that, I'm not really interested in Profar. He shouldn't even be a starting outfielder. The Padres should have done more. And I don't disagree with that, but he is where he is. He's getting the opportunity. And I think he had a home run and three RBIs last night.
And 0% rostered in 12-team online championship leagues.
Yeah. There you go. I think someone might be looking to add him this week in that On the Wire podcast listener league that you and I are in together.
Yeah. And once again, thank you for doing that. That was so much fun. We have five of those leagues. Adam and I are each in three of them, two separately and one with an overlap. And you were generous enough to hop in one with us. And it's a lot of fun already. Because even with only the five leagues, NFBC, the payouts are just for each league, but they are putting the overall ranking on there as well.
Yeah, it's very cool. I'm happy to be part of it, so thank you.
Absolutely. I am actually on the same player I brought up in this portion of the episode last week, the exact same guy, because his rostership actually went down. And Cesar Hernandez is the leadoff hitter for the Washington Nationals, and it may not be the best lineup, and he is not going to attempt to steal bases any longer. At least we haven't seen more than a couple of attempts since 2019. But he hit 21 home runs last year, and he's hitting leadoff for a Major League Baseball team. That is viable, and he's still only 38% rostered for online championship leagues. I believe that was 40% last week. And I know for some, including myself, he was a popular ad, so he was dropped in spots to make room for people making their moves last week. And if there's a leadoff hitter available, especially one that did show power last season, I'm game.
Yeah, I am game too. And I like that he bumped that power up career high, 21 homers last year. But let's also look at the situation he's in. Sure, the overall lineup, 1-9, not great for Washington. But who hits behind him?
Exactly.
Juan Soto, Nelson Cruz, Josh Bell, Keibert Ruiz. This guy's going to get pitches to hit, Kevin.
And yeah, and playing every day. I've brought up a few years that lots of times, and when we get into the mode where we assume, okay, if I have home runs and power, I'm getting RBIs. And if I have some speed and stolen bases, I'm getting runs. I'm not counting on any stolen bases from him, but I think we neglect the runs category when we're looking at our teams and our players. And this guy could push, if not exceed, 100 runs in that lineup spot.
He could with the guys hitting behind him, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, I did cheat, but he wasn't added nearly as much as I thought he would be last week. Cesar Hernandez once again. And Washington is one of those teams with 7 games this week. In fact, they have 7 games the following week as well. I think Adam brought it up last week. They play 18 straight days to start the season.
Wow.
Let's shift over to the pitching side, Lou. And is there any starters out there available if we're looking for a boost in wins and strikeouts this week?
Well, Carlos Hernandez from the Royals, 2-star pitcher, hasn't been big on the strikeouts in the big leagues, but in the minors, he was pretty solid. Decent matchups, though, versus Cleveland and Detroit. Not great, but decent. Shouldn't hurt the ratios either, and their games he can get wins in as well. Maybe he goes 5 innings in each one, picks up at least a win, maybe 8 to 10 strikeouts across those 10 innings. I think it's a solid opportunity for him, and he's a guy who could take the next step, a guy that we talked about on the Luke Gass Baseball podcast this weekend, that if he takes that next step and he throws well in his first 2 starts, maybe you keep him around. He might not just be a streamer for this week.
Yeah, he really moved up a lot of draft boards late in the season, I noticed. He started getting drafted earlier and earlier. I tried to draft him wherever I could, being a Royals fan, and it having watched many games that he's pitched, he just looks nasty when he's pitching on the mound. And so that's an added bonus just to know what he may be capable of when he puts it all together with his multiple pitches. He's definitely a guy that I agree with. And yeah, 29% rostered online championship 12 team leagues. My starter for the week is more matchup based, and it's not something I would do in every league, but even in the deepest of leagues, Jose Quintana of the Pittsburgh Pirates is available. In fact, he's 0% rostered in online championships as we head into the first full week of the season. And he's going to have 2 starts versus the Cubs and Washington Nationals, both at home in Pittsburgh. And it's, like I said, not something I would do everywhere, but in deep leagues where I'm lacking in some pitching depth and I don't want to start out in the hole in the strikeout category and hopefully snag a win here this week in the 2 opportunities, I wouldn't mind rolling with Jose Quintana in a spot or 2.
Okay, fair enough. Personally, I kind of group him in with my Tyler Alexander take from earlier in the show, why I may not take the risk. But another guy, maybe you'll like him more than Quintana now, is Dakota Hudson from the Cardinals. Not a big strikeout guy, but solid with the ratios. Has always been good, whether reliever or starter. Talked about him as well on the Lucas Baseball podcast this week. He gets the Pirates early on in the week. That's a great matchup. And I'm blanking on who that second matchup is, but it wasn't anything that's going to scare me away necessarily. So he's another 2-star pitcher I really like, and I really want to find out who that second.
It'll
that
be
second.
At Milwaukee next Saturday, it looks like.
Okay, so Milwaukee's not a great offense. They're no much more for their pitching, but that Pirates matchup is juicy.
Absolutely, and both of these last 2 guys. I think Carlos Hernandez should be rostered in most leagues. Definitely 15 teamers, and he is. He probably should be rostered in more of the 12 team leagues than he is. These last couple of guys, later in the season, I would be all over both of them, probably. this time of year, hopefully this isn't a move I have to make yet. But like I said, if there's some spots I'm lacking depth and don't want to fall too far behind, I'd take a chance on either one of them.
That's fair. That's fair. To each his own. Some people are worried about the strikeouts and the wins. I'm more concerned about the ratios early on.
Speaking of ratios, if we're looking to boost our ratios a little bit, who are you looking at this week?
So someone I was looking at in the offseason, someone I'm looking at now, and someone I'm looking at in the future as well, Art Warren of the Reds, a guy that I drafted a lot this year, hoping he would get saves for the Reds. And although certainly still possible, I like him regardless of the saves because of the high strikeout total and the ratios. Someone I would look to add if he's available, and could become more readily available after Santillan got the save for the Reds. He's getting the attention right now. I'll talk more about Santillan soon, but Art Warren is a guy that still some people don't even know who he is or how aware of how good he is, and a guy that I'm definitely very high.
Yeah, I am now as well. I was not. Actually, Adam brought him up a few episodes back and got him onto my radar, and I started looking more deeply, and I did start drafting him and have him on several teams. Definitely one of the players that, as you said, even if he's not getting the save opportunities right now, he's still worth holding on to, not only for future save possibilities, but this is a perfect example of a guy this time in the season. I'd rather put him in my lineup in most cases, even if I'm not counting on any saves, than the Quintana Dakota Hudson yet this time of year, before hopefully we're doing all right in our teams in depth and it's not something we have to do yet.
Take it a step further, a more established pitcher like John Gray, I sat him in the league in favor of Art Warren this week because I didn't like Gray's matchup versus the Blue Jays. And I figured that Warren might get a save, maybe some strikeouts, whatever it might be. But that's one of the things that you do. Turns out it was a smart move, whether Warren pitches or not. But I look at Warren like I look at, certainly not as established, but at Diego Castillo with the Mariners, a guy I have tons of shares of this year because he could get saves. He could get 4, could get 8, could get 15. Steckenrider got the first opportunity there, but the ratios are good. The strikeouts are good. I want to have guys like that in my lineup that I can put in everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. My guy here is Josh Stalmont. He's only had a third of an inning pitched so far this season, but it was in the seventh inning. I think most of us assumed Scott Barlow was going to be the closer. There were a few speculating that it could possibly be Stalmont. But in those leagues where people took the chance on Stalmont as a speculative closer, he's probably going to be dropped. Barlow got a 2-inning save, ended up with the win, actually, as the Royals scored their runs in the 8th inning. But I like the fact that they went to Stalmont so early. And I think going forward, this could continue for Kansas City, and it may not always be just for an inning. He may come in with his strikeout potential when they're in a jam and then come out the following inning as well to get us some multiple innings with some strikeouts and very nice ratio.
I think it's a great call, and him coming in earlier actually gives him more opportunity for wins potentially.
Exactly.
As well. So that's something to consider. And I really like him. I think he has closer stuff. He's just not going to be the guy because Barlow is also excellent, but he's proven to be a solid pitcher earlier on or throughout his career, and not much in 19, short season in 2020, but even then still pitched pretty well, has improved upon dangerous whips earlier in his career, which is something I like to see. The strikeouts are there. So solid option. And I would say that he's definitely next in line for saves should Barlow have a hiccup or, God forbid, suffer an injury, whatever it might be. So you have that as well in your back pocket.
Yeah, absolutely. And last season, by far in that whip category, down to 1.07. And he struggled early in the year after an injury. He struggled for a couple of weeks and then turned it around. And I don't think everybody realizes that, because struggles are always more publicized. But a lot of people know about that he struggled for part of the season. But he ended up with an ERA below 3 and a 1.07 whip.
That's all you can really ask for those types of relievers, guys that are going to get the strikeouts, help you with the ratios, and maybe pick up some wins along the way.
Absolutely. what if we are looking for saves? What if we didn't draft the higher priced closers? The speculations that we made so far haven't worked out. Who are you looking at if there may be somebody that has an opportunity coming up?
So we talked about some of the Twins guys already with Alcala and Pagan. He should take a look at. I briefly mentioned Tony Santillan with the Reds when I was talking about Warren, because he got a save opportunity, and that is a possibility that he gets some moving forward. Also talked about David Robertson quite a bit on this show. Clearly, yeah. I'm a big David Robertson fan. Maybe it's because he won the World Championship with the Yankees. He's been there twice. It's possible. But even with a crowded Reds bullpen, there should be some saves there for Santillan. And Robertson, the guy I added last week, and he got that for a save opportunity, so I would look to add him. He would be my priority, and then I'd back him up with Santillan, maybe Pagan or Alcala if any of them are available.
Yep, absolutely. Any of those guys. I'd like to add Drew Steckenrider to the list. He is someone that many were speculating. We believe that in Seattle, it's not going to be one guy, but as I stated earlier, I put quite a bit of stock in what managers do early and even in one game. And Paul Sewell was the high leverage guy. He was brought in first, and that's what they have said his role will be, the high leverage guy when he's needed. And then Steckenrider did get and convert their first save opportunity for the Mariners.
Yeah, and Steckenrider was good down the stretch for the Mariners in that role last year too, which is also something to consider. They have faith in him there, which is big. So I like that. I think 15 team leagues, a lot of people probably were interested in him if they were taking the Giles and the Seawalds and the Castillos. Took Steckenrider too, but in the shallower leagues, he should be out there. And I think he might lead this bullpen in saves. Is he going to get 20 plus? Not necessarily, but 15 to 17 saves might lead this bullpen.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you're correct. Only 28% rostered in the Yahoo leagues. 85% in online championships. So some of the 12 team leagues, he is available even. Anybody just as a wild card, somebody that, is there a prospect that might be available? Is there somebody that you not necessarily going to put in your starting lineup right now, but you might want to stash for a little bit if you have either IL spots or a healthy team so far?
I know he is widely owned in certain formats and certain sites, but he's available in a couple of my leagues, so I decided I'd bring him up, and it's O'Neill Cruz, the Pirates prospect. Should be available in the 12 teamers at least, but after not making the Pirates opening day roster, he was dropped even in some deeper leagues, and I would look to add him because he's a perfect stash for the bench if you have the spot. He should be called up by the end of the month, and if you wait until he gets called up, you're going to pay possibly north of 95 or 100 fab. Right now you might slide him in for under 10.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is a perfect example of checking the drops in your league from last week. After being sent down, there could be some either frustrated team managers or just don't want to stash a prospect that didn't end up making the team. And it's, as Adam likes to say, always check. It takes a couple of seconds to see if a guy's available.
Kevin, we have also seen it with Riley Green, but that's a little more of a open book because he is going to be out for 2 months. We know this. So if you don't have IL spots, it's really hard to now grab him unless you want to take the risk and try to hold on to him, because he will be impactful when he comes. But Cruz really could be up in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, so absolutely. That's what we expect, right? This is, we expect to see him as soon as this season will not count towards his service time.
If it wasn't the Pirates or they were a competitive team, he'd already be up, I think. Like we've seen with Witt and Julio and Torkelson and Hunter Green, etc.
Yeah, absolutely. And Riley Green was going to be my wild card for the week. I'm glad you brought him up, because I actually changed when I read that it looks like his rehab may take longer than originally thought. It's going to be at least June before he even starts working out again, it sounds like, now doing baseball activities. So probably July at the earliest before we see him in Detroit now is what I'm reading into that. So I pivoted to, I did a really good job of not bringing up a whole lot of Kansas City Royals for the first half of the show. But now I got another one, and that's Nick Prado. Already with two home runs on the season, picking up right where he left off last year. The concerning part is in 16 plate appearances, he does have 8 strikeouts. It is early. That's a small sample, but that's something to keep an eye on. For the time being, the Royals are going to alternate Carlos Santana and Hunter Dozier at first base and designated hitter. Obviously, Salvador Perez gets a couple of starts at designated hitter throughout the year to keep his bat in the lineup when they're resting him at catcher. But Nick Prado is going to keep hitting the ball out of the ballpark like he did last season and so far already this season. If anything falters with Santana or Dozier, I think we'll see Nick Prado pretty quickly.
And he also brings the speed element to the game, which you don't see all the time with power hitting first baseman specifically. So that's another thing to consider. While we're on Royals, who we could stash, MJ Melendez is someone that should also be mentioned. I have him stashed in my second catcher slot in league, so I'm not even using the bench spot for him. I think he's that good and that impactful that I'm willing to wait it out a couple weeks, maybe even 3 or 4 weeks, getting a zero from that spot, because I think he makes up for it when he does get the call. And I think he will get the call because they have played with him at third base in different positions, and there will be days where Salvi needs to get in at the DH spot and Melendez can play behind the plate. I think he's a great bat. Talking about power in the minor leagues, look what he did last year.
Yeah, 41 home runs across a couple of levels last season. I think it takes an injury before we see him. However, there's some guys in that Royals infield that we definitely know have had the injury bug bite them in the past. So it is definitely somebody to keep an eye on. I agree. Adam has asked me almost every episode if my opinion on that has changed, because he drafted him in a lot of spots, and I just think it's too crowded for him right now. But absolutely, if there's an injury or two in that Royals infield, he would definitely be an option.
Yeah, I'm not counting on Mondesi suiting up for more than 60 games this year.
I'm hoping for about double that, but we'll see how that goes. Anybody else, Lou, just in general, anybody else we're looking at this week, or any general ideas on just strategy as we're heading into the first full week of the 2022 Major League Baseball
season? How risky
season
you want to get, Kevin, because Shane Baz was dropped in a number of places too, and he could be back at some point, and he's arguably the second best starter on the Rays team if he's healthy. Could be a guy to take a look at. If you could roster him right now, why not take the chance, because he could be a difference maker. We weren't expecting more than 120, 125 innings anyways. He's going to probably miss the rest of this month, but he could be back pretty soon.
Yeah, absolutely. If someone like that is available, that's the type of guy I'm definitely trying to stash. In the leagues with no IL spots, it can be difficult, but you can usually get by with one, and he would definitely rank above just about anybody else to be taking up my stash spot on a roster for sure.
It all depends on your team's health currently. Yeah. I have some teams that have zero injuries, and I have some teams that already have 3 or 4. So if you have the spot right now, do it. And you know what? You won't have to spend much to get him probably, because he is injured and he was recently dropped. And if he has a setback or takes too long, you cut him. But right now, if he's out there, I would take the chance.
Yep. Absolutely. I agree. Lou, I selfishly a couple of times now have invited you onto the show, both when Adam was on vacation. We've worked together in the past. I love hanging out with you, talking baseball, but also it will give us the opportunity to get you back when Adam is here. So we'll get an extra appearance out of you, hopefully, as well. Remind everybody what you got going on. There's so much. So let everybody know where they can find you and what you got going.
Firstly, I have not been formally introduced on a show to Adam yet, so I would like to get to hang out with both you guys for a while. So that sounds great. You let me know. But follow me at Landers Talks on Twitter. Check out drroto.com, where I am the content director for Major League Baseball there, fantasy stuff, DFS stuff, and just opinionated as well. Sports Byline USA and the Armed Forces Network, and Sirius XM Fantasy Sports Sundays. I got the Counting Stats Pod. I have the Lose Locks DFS pod, the Lucas Baseball podcast, which we brought up quite a bit here today. And speaking of the counting stats pod, I think I owe you a little guest appearance on that coming up pretty soon. So stay available for me, would you?
Oh, absolutely. It's always a blast hanging out, talking baseball. We will definitely, definitely do that again soon. And that's going to wrap it up for episode 54 now of On the Wire. Please make sure to subscribe, share, and review the podcast wherever you might be listening. And we'll be back every Sunday with a detailed FAB breakdown throughout the entire season. And of course, keep a lookout for my companion article over at pitcherlist.com. Comes out each Sunday where I list some interesting names by position. Not as important yet at this early in the year, as we mentioned earlier. But as the season goes on, we start having needs as injuries and things arise. Keep a lookout for new episodes every day across the Pitcher List Fantasy Baseball podcast feed and the Pitcher List General Baseball podcast feed. For those baseball fans not as much into the fantasy game, you can follow myself on Twitter at HastingKevin. Adam on vacation. Hope he's enjoying that with his family. He is at 80 grade, all spelled out. And of course, follow the pod itself at On the Wire Pod. Thank you for listening this week. Good luck with your bids on Sunday night. And with that, we bid you goodbye.